This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Jane Brown.
Libby will be back from vacation on Thursday. In the meantime, great to have you here with me and the rest of the Fight Back team. Well, how much more pressure is on Canada now that Donald Trump has deposed Nicolas Maduro of his presidency in Venezuela? Within a day of the U.S. military capture of Maduro and his wife, the U.S. president was musing on Air Force One about making the same move related to the president of Colombia, whom he called a very sick man. Trump also said he continues to offer U.S. soldiers to Mexico and revived his talk of taking over Greenland. There was no mention of Canada. But is it now just a matter of time before Donald Trump resurrects his 51st state rhetoric? While our phone lines are down, you are welcome to text with your comments at 866-740-4740.
And now, the Recovering Politicians panel.
With their expert opinion and perspective, I'd like to welcome Lisa Raitt, a former federal Conservative deputy leader, George Smitherman, former Ontario Liberal Health Minister and Deputy Premier, and Sherry DeNovo, former NDP MPP. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year, Jane.
Sherry, you've been really vocal on X. I've been soaking up a lot of your posts since the capture of Maduro, asking whether Greenland and Canada are next. You write, tick, 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 who will stop the Fourth Reich? I'm a little bit scared after reading your posts.
Hey, you know, X lends itself to that, all I can say, Jane. But bottom line here, you know, is we should be very deeply concerned. I think Mark Carney's missing the boat on this one. I don't think that this is good news for Canada in any way, shape or form. I mean, this is a good old Monroe doctrine at work here. And this is the most hawkish president we've seen in a while. Nigeria, Venezuela, who's next? Greenland, us. I mean, I don't think with Canada it would be an invasion. But, you know, Venezuela produces gold, lithium. Venezuela, despite the huge investment, because even the oil companies are a little, you know, up in the air about this thing. That's investment that might not go to our tar sands. So, I mean, I don't think in Carney's hope of the elbows up in our own industry, that this is good news. It can't be seen as good news.
Lisa, how do you see the developments related to Canada?
I think Sherry has nailed it in terms of the difficulties with future revenues for the country, and that has to do with what's happening out west and the extraction of oil and gas. Venezuela is now in play for the United States, which kind of takes a lever away from Canada when it comes to negotiations with the United States. You know, they may not need Canada anymore, but the world will, because not everybody's going to want to do deals with Donald Trump necessarily. The concern for me is that I really don't think, I hesitate when I say it because you can't rule anything out with this guy. I don't think, like Cherry, we're going to have a military takeover. I do think that he's trying to bring Canada to its knees economically. I do believe that. And he just means that Canadians, we can't be passive aggressive about it. And we also can't be, I would say, too optimistic about what are the things that we can possibly do. Hunker down and make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can. Anger doesn't help us. Planning does.
Well, that would certainly be characteristic of Mark Carney's disposition. He never seems to be rattled. But is he, George, do you think the Prime Minister is allowing Donald Trump to bring Canada to its knees?
Well, you know, diplomacy in the Don Rowe doctrine era, there's no playbook for that. So frequently we look to conventional wisdom to deploy advice, etc. I think that's challenging. I mean, I think the effect of Trump and the play in Venezuela is likely to reinforce Canadian public opinion in favor of pipelines to Tidewater. And in a certain sense, you might argue that in the relatively short time that this man's had in office, he's made a big pivot in that direction. Lucky for him, perhaps, right? I mean, I think everyone's talking about the Venezuelan oil, and it's easy to get rattled by that. But I think that Guyana next door has a lot of oil, too, a lot, and might be a more productive place to get it. I'm married to a Cuban and we have properties in Havana, and the risks for Havana's lights going out on a relative, like for days on end or whatever, is very great as well. So there's so much going on. The most hopeful sign I have is that you might say it's a big military and they can operate on many fronts at the same time, but there's only one decision-making apparatus. And at a certain point in time, they're going to have their blessed hands full. And I think that's one of the, I know I shouldn't be counting on that, but I see that as a bit of a hopeful thing. Like, obviously in his mind, he's got all the aspiration in the world, but it's hard to have a multi-front effort like that successfully.
The world order is very much teetering at the moment, Sherry, and organizations like NATO may not have a place in the new world order if the United States and if Russia continue to have their way with sovereign land and being in a position where they are deposing presidents. In the case of Maduro, I mean, we all know that that was a false presidency, but still the action and the very lukewarm reaction from the world would suggest that Donald Trump can effectively do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I mean, might is right is his ruling, you know, phrase now. And at least, you know, now they're being upfront. This isn't weapons of mass destruction. This is we want their oil. I mean, there's an honesty to that, right?
Right.
But I mean, but at the end of the day, it's terrifying. I think we should, as a world, be concerned. I mean, because you know, they're talking about Iran next. You know, fair enough. But I mean, you know, remember China exists as well, and China has oil in Venezuela, and China has oil deals with Iran. And so this is not a peace president. I mean, that's kind of a joke now. But I mean, you know, so in terms of world peace, you know, I think we should be concerned on that scale. But also, I mean, this is, you know, horrendous bully who's just doing what he wants. My hope personally is, first of all, that he allows elections. And second of all, that the American people speak out. And particularly, I would be interested in Lisa's take on this, people within his own party. Like, where are the Republicans who are saying, this is even scaring us? I mean, I think the world is looking to within the United States, like, where's the resistance to this guy?
Well, they are the same Republicans that basically allowed him to come back after the January 6th, the riots. Today, the fifth anniversary, Lisa. So I don't know. There doesn't seem to be much pushback at all in the Republican Party. Not that we want to get too far into U.S. politics, but do you have any comments or insight on that?
The only insight I would give you is this. I think everybody is waiting for the midterms that are happening in the fall of 2026, and nobody wants to stick their neck out. But if Mr. Trump loses some key areas, I think you'll start to see more murmurings and rumblings from within the Republican caucus, because it'll show that perhaps the president doesn't have a tight as chokehold as they think he does in terms of their electoral futures. And I would put a name out there. I think the one person that I'd be watching, because I do think that somewhere inside he's still sane, and that's Marco Rubio. And I think he's going to take a look at the midterms, as will others, and then determine whether or not they're going to take on this president and oppose him and J.D. Vance in the last 2 years of his mandate.
George, your thoughts along that vein?
Well, I'll bet you Marco Rubio has some trauma from the last time he thought he was going to stand up to Trump. I do think he's presenting quite well. I mean, compared to the rest of them, et cetera. And it'd be interesting to see if what Lisa predicts comes true. I do think the midterms, it's all about that. The amount of money that's going to be spent on those for the manipulation, et cetera, is going to be astonishing in its own right. But I think that's one of the hopeful bits, plus some form of lame duckness that can come into play later on in your final term. And I think, you know, sadly, in a sense, these are the things that this is what we've got to grasp onto, is like, hopefully the midterms will actually create a Congress that actually, that, you know, stands up for itself and uses its powers, et cetera. But it's really quite a terrifying time.
Jane, I just want to add one more thing, and maybe George and Cherry can weigh in on it. The more I think about the midterms, though, the more worried I get that Trump is going to become more and more extreme in the kinds of things that he does. If he thinks he's going to be losing some power, you know, what could possibly come next? Am I being a little overreaching there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I honestly, yeah, I'm. I think George used the word terrifying. I think there is a certain amount of terror involved in that, because there is so much money behind him. I mean, and because of their financing, I would say lack of laws in the United States, as we all know, you know, money does speak. And so, yeah, as I say, I hope there are honest, free, reasonable elections. That's mm-hmm. kind of a distant hope. Yeah.
866-740-4740, our text line. While our phone lines are down temporarily, your comments, add your voice to the conversation here. 866-740-4740. Sherry DeNovo, George Smitherman, Lisa Wright, and Jane Ferlibby here on Zoomer Radio's Fight Back. Our recovering politicians join us every Tuesday after the new news. Let's look specifically at what Mark Carney told reporters today in Paris when asked about the situation between the United States and Venezuela. Carney says his government working to expand access to oil markets in Asia. He also is talking about the heightened need for a pipeline to BC's northwest coast. But just to go around the table one more time, Lisa, are we not led to believe that is dependent on a First Nations approval, which is not going to happen?
I don't think it's dependent upon First Nations approval, Jane. And I think it's going to be more along the lines of consultation. It's going to be sticky because we believe in free and informed consent. But the question is it unanimous consent, or is it enough to have consent? We're actually going to have to test this notion. In the past, we didn't have to test the notion because the environmental side was so strong in terms of saying we're never going to do this. Economics, sovereignty, and Donald Trump has forced the notion of a pipeline to mm-hmm. the West Coast as being something more palatable for people. And as a result, this is the final frontier, I think, in terms of what we're going to be trying to nuance out. What does it actually mean? Does one community on the West Coast of 40 people, can they stop an entire pipeline for a country? We're going to find out.
Mm. Pierre Poilievre possibly having a very relevant moment, writing to Carney in a letter that the move by the United States has altered the global energy landscape, urging Carney to immediately approve a pipeline to the Pacific coast. Is that more likely, George, in your view, now that the U.S.-Venezuela situation has become so heightened?
Well, I think people analyzing the Venezuela situation have had plenty of reason to understand that's not as easy as you think to increase their production by millions of barrels, et cetera. And the timelines associated with that, I've seen like 5 to 10 years, et cetera. So I think that Poilievre is seizing on the moment to try and get in the mix of the story. But personally, I'm convinced that building such a piece of infrastructure invariably requires a very significant degree of work up front, not to get unanimity, because I think even some of the other projects which are being built in the Northwest have a lot of indigenous support, but not unanimity, because you've got chiefs and hereditary chiefs there. It's very complicated. But I really don't think that the times mean that it's that it that an effort should be made to jam it through. The ability to slow down the development of a project by people who have been not well treated in the circumstances is greater than the time that needs to be invested in the front end. So I don't really support it. Mm. I would just say, I don't know, but how come twinning the line, like I keep coming back to say, well, we just built one with the capacity out to Burnaby, et cetera. It's like, why not twin that one? And I haven't really, I haven't heard why not, but to me, that's a path of less resistance.
Mm. Share your thoughts on the pipeline.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not supportive of more pipelines. And I think the Wet'suwet'en have shown that they've flexed their muscle. They've shown that, you know, they can really resist that, whatever the federal government throws at them, or the provincial government for that matter. So I think it, first of all, we're looking at years and billions of dollars. And if Carney, you know, where do the billions and billions of dollars come? Ultimately, what hits your table is food and rent and mortgage payments and housing and healthcare and things like that. And if it starts to impact that, I think Carney got to watch his back in the polls. So this is like, I think the pipeline is a pipe dream. However, I don't side with Poilievre because I think him coming out rah-rah Trump, like within minutes of the invasion of Venezuela, was a very bad look under the circumstances in Canada. So I'm interested in what happens to the Conservative leadership convention. Here we live with so many question marks in Canada. So the overall answer is, who knows if the pipeline will be built, can be built, will be financed, and what it all means. But it ain't going to happen soon.
Really appreciate your perspectives on this very important topic. It's a hot button topic around the world at the moment. We'll zero in a little bit more now on a specifically Canadian topic, and that is Chrystia Freeland saying that she will step down in the coming weeks as Member of Parliament for University Rosedale here in Toronto, now that she has accepted a new role as an economic advisor, an unpaid economic advisor to Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. Lisa, what do you make of all this? And why not just step down? Why not say, let's do it now, as opposed to in the coming weeks? What's the strategy?
Well, I think only Chrystia can tell you why she's not stepping down right away. I can't fathom why she wouldn't. This is actually serious in terms of setting precedents going into the future. Substitute the country Ukraine for the country United States, right? Can you imagine a member of parliament saying, I'm going to spend the next 6 weeks working for the United States, by the way, on pick a topic, critical minerals, but then I'm going to resign as the MP. People would lose their minds. Mm-hmm. And we're in the same situation right now. So for the good of the country and the good of the ability for us to say with a straight face that we have a parliamentary system that is clean, she needs to do that. And the reason why I came to this conclusion, Jane, is I read somewhere that in an interview she had said that she's already making phone calls to heads of companies, pension plans, and CEOs, or she's fielding company calls already on what she can do for Ukraine. That is completely inappropriate as a sitting member of parliament to do that. She now has two masters she's trying to serve, and the only ones she should be serving are the constituents of University Rosedale.
Right. She had no problem stepping down immediately when she announced that she would no longer be part of cabinet, and she had this special post, which she is now no longer going to see through, which was offered by Mark Carney. George, is there something in here about when a by-election is triggered, and the timing around when an MP steps down? Like, is this kind of an administrative thing?
Could be. Yeah. It could be any number of things. I think Lisa's right on tone, but I think I really feel like Chrystia Freeland's making an excellent transition to the next stage of her life after a significant contribution to Canada, and between the work with the Rhodes Scholar Foundation or whatever it's called, and supporting Zelensky, which has been a passion of hers through her whole time in public life, being supportive of Ukraine. I think that you know, that's what she's going to be. That's what she's going to be remembered for. Not that over the Christmas holidays, there was a 2 week period where she didn't send a letter quite quickly enough or what have you. So I don't draw quite as much anger about it. And I think in the bigger scheme of things, it's we should recognize that she's made a great contribution to Canada and her family have. And I think that the global acknowledgement of this is very appropriate. So I'm happy for her to be see her skill set used well, and you know, let's get on with who's going to represent University of Rosedale.
Right, and Sherry, it does. I mean, from just watching Chrystia Freeland and her career take all of the timing out of the equation, this is a very interesting move to volunteer to help Ukraine. At the moment, once she steps down as MP, she doesn't have an immediate salary. So it feels like a very admirable move.
Well, I mean, I agree with Lisa. She should have stepped down before that announcement came out. Now, maybe she intended to. Who knows the backstory there?
Right.
But I mean, I certainly, I mean, you know, I've kind of our paths crossed many times around Ukraine, because in my riding, when I represented it was a huge Ukrainian community, biggest Ukrainian festival in North America, in Parkdale High Park, and she would always be part of that, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, you know, we've met. She's a very smart cookie. I think she will do very well in life. I don't think Chrystia Freeland's going to worry about money at all. I mean, you know, George and I can attest to, you know, the federal pensions are pretty healthy and good, and she'll be fine. And plus, she's, you know, doing her job as an academic. So she'll be fine. But yeah, bad look. Like, that should not have happened. I also don't think there's going to be a lot of anger about it. I think that's a bit inside baseball stuff for the average voter in University of Rosedale. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens in that, right?
We just have a few minutes left here with our recovering politicians, so let's switch gears and talk about Doug Ford. He was commenting on many, many things yesterday when he was answering questions. But I do find this whole thing about the cell phone records very interesting. If you haven't heard the story, a panel of three judges has thrown out an attempt by the provincial government to stop the release of government calls on Premier Doug Ford's personal cell phone. Doug Ford is saying that he has many, many calls on his cell phone. As we all know, he talks about it all the time with people of the province, which he says are very personal. They get into a lot of personal detail with him. They trust him. And he doesn't think it's right that his records get released and compromise the individuals who have phoned him. I'm wondering what you all think of that. I think we're at Lisa.
Carry two phones, a personal one and a government one, and use them appropriately. And that avoids the whole situation. As in the banking world, I carry two phones, because if there is a lawsuit, anything that's on the phone is admissible and can be utilized in discovery. And as a result, you separate your business from your personal life. And where there is a mix of both, err on the side of making sure that if you're talking business, you tell them you got to call this one. If it's a personal call, then we'll talk about this one. But he's got to carry two phones.
Yeah. I mean, it is as simple as that. But if you're caught up, I don't know, George, if it actually is realistic for Doug Ford to say, I got to hang up with you now, call this number. I mean, he would be doing that all day long. So is the misstep here in allowing Ontario taxpayers to call him directly?
Well, I've taken advantage of it. So, hey, for anybody that's going to search through those numbers, it's the new sunshine list. And then they're going to do tracebacks, and I can explain. I think it's a tricky one, okay? Like, when I realized that my question period answers book could be FOI'd, I was like, well, what's the point in having it then? And I stopped having more than 5 or 6 notes in it, etc. And I never really could imagine operating in a world where, you know, you're going to be forced to hand over the list of people that you speak to on your phone. And it's definitely a complicating factor. Mm-hmm. The thing about it is that from a populism standpoint, It's going to play well because he's going to be able to remind people that he's actually that accessible. And that's really quite remarkable, actually, in its own right.
No, it absolutely is. Sherry, final comment to you.
Yeah, I just, you know, if there's something untoward in what he said on that phone, why would he have said it? I think the voter's going to think, like, I mean, if it can't be public in a way that he prides himself on being so Unca Doug and so public and so accessible, why can't this be accessible? And it raises doubts, it raises questions about the person that he's being projected to be. So, yeah, carry two phones.
Carry two phones. Okay, recovering politicians, thank you. That was our first conversation of 2026. It was a good one. Libby will chat with you next week.
Thanks, Shane.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye. Lisa Raitt, former federal conservative deputy leader, George Smitherman, former Ontario Liberal health minister and deputy premier, and Sherry DeNovo, former NDP MPP. Jane for Libby here on Zoomer Radio's Fight Back. Great to have you along. And still to come, really looking forward to this conversation as well, Ontario Solicitor General joins us with why he requested of Toronto Police to start making arrests related to hate-motivated protests. Michael Kersner is with us next.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Oh, no. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Jane Brown.
Libby will be back on Thursday, rested and relaxed from vacation. Tasha Carradine is here tomorrow with the medical record panel. And I'm about to have what I know is going to be a very interesting conversation with Ontario Solicitor General. As we reported last week on our news, Michael Kersner has asked Toronto Police to prevent and combat hate-motivated offenses when enforcing protests and demonstrations across the city. In a letter to the service initially written December 11th and released publicly on December 30th, Michael Kersner underlined what he describes as an urgent need for firm, consistent, and visible enforcement of hate, intimidation, and harassment motivated offenses from the city's police. And a reminder, if you would like to comment on this topic, our text line is open at 866-744-740, 866-744-740. To find out why and what effect his request has had, Solicitor General Michael Kersner joins us now. Thank you. And how may I address you, sir?
It's great to be with you. Just call me Michael.
Okay, Michael. Was there any one instance which prompted you to write and send this letter to Toronto Police?
Well, it's something. Firstly, Jane, it's great to be with you and your listeners. There were actually two letters. I sent a letter on December the 11th. And under our new Community Safety and Policing Act that came into force just about a year ago, as Solicitor General, I have the right to advise police services and police service boards, and I did, and I expressed to Toronto Police Service and the Toronto Police Service Board my concern for our public safety, and I did it respectfully. I love my Toronto Police Service. I get along very well with our command leaders. I get along very well with the Toronto Police Association. But, you know, after over 2 years of countless protests, and this isn't just about the Jewish community, it's about everyone in Ontario that just wants to go about their daily lives.
I think you've provided some information that a lot of people may not have realized, because we've always been led to believe that politicians may not influence the action of police. But the Solicitor General of Ontario is an exception to that. That's what you're saying.
No, not at all. There's no elected politician that can direct any police service. I can't direct any police service, municipal, First Nations, or OPP. But what I am allowed to do is to advise under Section 3 of the Community Safety and Policing Act. And that's what I did. And I wrote a letter on December the 11th. And really, it goes, Jade, to the consistency of our message, our tone, our expectations as a provincial government led by Premier Ford, that we take our public safety very, very seriously. My letter was to highlight, especially to the Police Service Board, that their priorities and planning should align with the provincial priorities. And that is that we must have a strategy by the Police Service Board to combat harassment, intimidation, and hate. And that's the tone of my letter. The letter is a serious letter, but the letter is also a letter of respect to my Toronto Police Service, to the chief, and to the board.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. So what kinds of actions have taken place leading you to believe that hate-motivated crimes, or at least some of them, are going unchallenged?
Well, it's a few things. Firstly, you know, we can't control the geopolitical world. What we have seen is an unprecedented rise of hate. We've seen an unprecedented rise of antisemitism that I've said publicly has no moral equivalency. And we have seen in my own constituency of York Centre, which includes Bathurst and Sheppard, numerous rallies that are intimidating to my constituents. These rallies are harassing our residents that just want to go about their lives. And what we saw also at the Eaton Centre was deplorable. Mm-hmm. So what I want to do is send a message to reset the priorities recommit our priorities, and that is that we are going to fight hate, we are going to fight intimidation, we're going to fight harassment, and we're going to make sure with our legislation, with the regulations, and with the expectation and tone, and the great relationship we have with the chief and the association, that their provincial government is a partner to help them keep Toronto safe.
Should there not be a reminder as well, Michael, that if people in this city want to protest or rally against governments around the world, and, you know, we're referring to the Israeli government, the state of Israel, should they not go to the consulate or Nathan Phillips Square, like going to individual neighborhoods to equate people of Jewish heritage with the state of Israel? It makes no sense in terms of trying to make a point. Let alone the anti-Semitism.
Listen, what's amazing in our country of Canada is our democracy. And I applaud the fact that people in Ontario speak over 100 languages. People in Ontario celebrate their diversity. Mm-hmm. That's great. I support that. But, you know, there's also something called the Ontario values that are decent, that are tolerant, that are respectful. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with protesting. That's our democratic right. But don't cross the line. Don't make it personal. Don't harass somebody. Don't make them feel that they don't belong. And whether you are rallying against one cause or another, I think we have to reset the fact, and I'll restate it again, Jane, that 99.99% of Ontarians get along great.
Right.
That's what makes us great, is the fact that we are diverse. But for that very fraction, that 0.001 that can't get along, don't misbehave, because it's not fair for the rest of us.
Right. I think, you know, I was at a Raptors game, and my husband and I go a couple times a year, and I'm always reminded at Raptors games, and this has nothing to do with sports, but the cross-section of people who go to these games, they literally are Toronto. There are people of every generation, every ethnicity, every skin color, and it reminds me of what it is that we have done so well. And, you know, the fact that we have people out there who are so motivated against hate, or so motivated in favor of hate, it really tears at what we've created here, which is seen around the world as something special.
Well, our province is very special. And, you know, it's something that in my own constituency of York Centre, We're Jewish, we're Italian, we're Filipino, we're Vietnamese, we're Caribbean, we're Greek, and the list goes on and on and on. And what I want to reinforce is that from a government's perspective, we believe that this inherent right, equal to all of us, Jane, to simply live safely in our own homes and communities should always be fulfilled. In writing the letter to the Police Service Board and to the chief, I just reminded them that we want to have consistent and decisive policing everywhere in our province. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that our government priorities to fight crime, to fight intimidation, and to fight harassment are without any other modern day precedent of a government that takes it as serious as we do.
So there is a bit of pushback. And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Solicitor General Michael Kersner here on Zoomer Radio's Fight Back, Jane for Libby. When reached for comment, spokesperson for Toronto Police, Stephanie Sayer, says the service has responded to more than 800 demonstrations since October 2023, a reference to the Hamas terror attacks in Israel, resulting in nearly 500 arrests and more than 1,000 criminal charges related to protests and hate crimes. And in that time, the service has nearly tripled the size and capacity of its hate crime unit. That is some serious pushback to your request.
Well, again, my letter of December 30th talked about the urgency to underscore the need for firm, consistent, and visible enforcement. And that's what we expect all police services in our province to adhere to. That's the priority of our provincial government. But, you know, we've seen, as you said, over 800 examples of protests. And this is not just about the Jewish community. Yeah. It's about everyone that just wants to go about their daily lives. And that's why we have taken bold action. Firstly, Jane, by having a great piece of new legislation that was supported by all the police associations, including the Ontario Association of Chiefs of Police, we're providing enormous grants to police services across the province, include helping them with hate crime training. And most importantly, we're putting an unparalleled focus on having more boots on the ground by an investment our government made, Jane, of over $40 million a year of wiping out basic constable training fees. That means that 360 new officers that will be recruited for Toronto that will go to Elmer, Ontario at the Ontario Police College won't pay the $17,000 bill. So our government, led by the Premier, has been consistent, it's been strong, and it has been effective in how we've communicated our message. And again, I love my Toronto Police Service. I respect our command leaders. I absolutely have a great relationship with the Toronto Police Association. But we have to have this consistency, consistent approach across our province.
Got a text here from Steve in Brampton. And by the way, the text line is 866-744-740. Steve in Brampton writes, long, long overdue. I've been ashamed of our lack of action thus far to obvious infringements on the rights of others. I will judge the results. Best wishes. Thank you for that, Steve. Michael, when it comes to the individual officer, you know, what would provide hesitancy for them to not make an arrest based on the law that is written? Is there enough support for the individual officers to make these arrests?
Well, firstly, again, I want to shout out both the command leadership and the Toronto Police Association. On the command leadership side, there's exceptional training that happens, and the association is very supportive of their members. This is not a simple thing. We've never had an example, Jane, of 800 protests in 2 years. And again, coming from the Jewish community, I can tell you that the rise of anti-Semitism is without any moral equivalency or without any equal in modern day history. Toronto Police Service has dispatched a much larger hate crimes unit, and that's excellent. We put in tougher laws provincially. And Jane, we've also advocated to the federal government to move forward at their level. because it's the federal government through different pieces of legislation that define what is an act of hate. They came forward with Bill C-9. I think C-9 is a step in the right direction. I'm very supportive of the federal government's approach to work collaboratively with us. And I have a great relationship with our federal public safety minister. But, you know, it's not singular dimensional. All governments, municipal, provincial, federal, have to work together. And I think we do. But there is no modern day precedent for over 800 rallies. Mm-hmm. This was not easy for Toronto Police Service. We know that. But the provincial government is behind all police services with our expectation and tone that we must have consistent policing.
Right. It's a compassionate request, effectively.
The request is to highlight the urgent need. But I also want to go back to the board. The majority of the board in Toronto is appointed by council as directed by the mayor's office. So we need the majority of the board, together with the provincial appointees, we have three, they have four, to work together and to make sure that the board's priorities align with that of the province. And we all want to see our public safety adhered to. But I really believe that the letters that I sent both on December the 11th and December the 30th just articulate our government, under the leadership of Premier Ford, our serious tone when it comes to public safety. And it's something we're not going to back down on. We want to be there for the average person that just wants to live their daily lives safely.
Thank you so much for this.
Great to be with you.
Ontario Solicitor General Michael Kerzner. It is Jane for Libby here. And coming up in the final segment of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, getting your money's worth from your credit cards. We'll find out the best credit card options for cash back and rewards points next.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Jane Brown.
What credit card do you feel gets you the best value for your purchases, whether it's cash back or points toward what you buy, including travel? Give us a text at 866-740-4740. Patrick Soyka is the founder of Rewards Canada and has released the annual ranking of the top travel and cashback rewards credit cards for 2026 and joins us now. I'm a big believer in this, Patrick. How is the new year treating you so far?
It's been good so far. Thanks for having me on the show, Jane.
Yeah, great to have you. Let's talk about your criteria for the best credit cards that offer the best value.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of factors that go in. It's like the value of the points, and it's not just like what you earn, but actually what you redeem them for. I like to tell people, you know, just because a card is advertising, you know, 5 points per dollar, 10 points per dollar, it may not be that good if the redemption rate's not that great. So you have to look at both sides of that. You know, and like for travel, I look at, you know, can you use it for cruises? What cities can you fly to? You know, like we've had this year, we had 2025, we had VI Porter credit cards from Porter Airlines come out. But outside of Ontario, Quebec, you know, there's not that much utility because Porter Airlines is, you know, they don't do that much flying, let's say out west here, because I'm in Calgary. So there's all these things that we take into consideration, you know, and kind of look at cards as a whole for the entire nation.
And how do you divide up the categories so we can go at them one at a time here?
Yeah, so that's a tough one. So we do an overall travel rewards card, and that is looking, and that's heavily focused more on the points that you earn and the value of them. And the winner there was the American Express Cobalt card. That card's kind of been unmatched for years. But this year we actually added a new category. A lot of our readers are like, well, what are the best cards while you're traveling? And so I really, you know, thought hard about that. I'm like, yeah, we should do that because, you know, it's one thing to earn the travel rewards and, you know, to fund your travels with them. But what about when you're away from home? What are the best cards out there? And so we did a travel category, and the top one there is the Scotia Passport Visa Infinite card. And that's because it has things like no foreign transaction fees. So if you're outside the country and you're using the card, you're going to save the average most cards charge you 2.5% on foreign transactions. So you're going to save that. And there's things like airport lounge access and benefits. So, and then the categories just go down from there. There's ultra premium cards, the ones that, you know, that you're paying $500 a year for, and they give you a lot of luxury benefits, no fee cards. We have 11 categories in total that we look at these cards.
Okay. So do you want to start with the American Express Cobalt card and why it is taking the top prize again?
Yeah, so that one is what we call a points earning machine. There's three cards in Canada. We actually classify as points earning machines because it earns up to 5 points per dollar when you're out shopping. The 5 points is on eats and drinks. So like, you know, groceries, restaurants, bakeries, you name it, you're earning 5 points per dollar. And then you can redeem those for any travel you like. And that works out to a 5% return on spending. It goes even higher because you can convert them to Air Canada Aeroplan. You can convert them to British Airways. American Express just had big news over the weekend. They have a conversion rate to Air France KLM, and they improved that, which just gave the card even more value. So it gives you kind of every travel reward option and even cashback option under the sun, and it's a high points earner. So that's why that's the top travel rewards card.
And what about the higher Amex cards, like the gold and then the platinum, the annual fees go up, but the benefits also seem to go up?
Yeah, absolutely. So like the platinum card, that continues to be the number one ultra premium card in Canada. We call it ultra premium, anything with an annual fee of $300 or more per year. So that has unlimited airport lounge access. So you can get into over, I think it's 1,400 lounges around the world for you. A lot of times you and a guest here in Canada, depending on the lounge, it can be you, your spouse, and two kids. So just very flexible there. They have, an annual travel credit, an annual dining credit. It's more, I like to call that card the kind of a luxury traveler's best friend, because it even gives you things like hotel upgrades, gives you elite status with hotel programs. It just kind of gives you, you know, a whole bunch of things, but it also costs $799 per year for just the primary card. And if you want additional cards, they're $250 per year. So it's not for everybody. So that's, that's why we have that kind of separate category for the ones who can make use of paying that type of fee.
Okay, talk to us about you mentioned the Scotia Passport Visa Infinite card, and you highlighted that for international travelers.
Yeah, so that is, I like to call this one the most well-rounded card in Canada. So it does everything really well. It may not be the best in one category, but it kind of does a little bit of everything. It has really good insurance coverage. Like I said, it's no effects, no foreign transaction fees. It gives you airport lounge access as well with 6 passes per year. So you get in for, you know, 6 times for free, which more than covers the annual fee. Has decent earn rates and decent redemption rates with the Scene Plus program. It's a very flexible program in that you can book any travel you want. You can go to Air Canada, book flights, WestJet, you name it. Any of those programs or any of those travel providers, and then just redeem your points against the charge. So it just gives you a little bit of everything. So, you know, some of us in the points and miles world, we like to carry 6, 8, 10 credit cards to, you know, to get a little bit of everything.
Yes.
But for most Canadians, you only want to be carrying like maybe 2 or 3 cards. And yeah, the Passport Infinite is one of those that kind of covers you in kind of all directions.
Right. Because there are those cards, like I'm thinking of the Dividend Visa card, where if you put gas on that or groceries, it's an automatic 4% back cash. You actually get that cash anytime you want to redeem it. So compare that to like a points card.
Yeah, exactly. And then for some people, the cashback is they like that better because they don't want to be stuck with travel. That's why there's some cards. I mean, you know, the Scene Plus cards like the Scotia and the Cobalt from Amex, they have cashback options. So they're very strong cashback cards options too, but some people just don't want to be stuck with that. And yeah, you have like like the CIBC Dividend Visa Infinite, Scotia Momentum, the Rogers World Elite MasterCard. There's a whole bunch of really good cashback choices where, you know, you're basically getting cash back and you can choose what to do with this. You're not limiting yourself to, say, groceries. You're not limiting yourself to travel. You can just use your cash back however you like. You can use it for all of those. So yeah, absolutely. And that again comes down to, there's some people who will run with multiple cashback cards. They'll use the Dividend for groceries, they'll use a different one for gas, and they'll use a different one for transit.
It becomes a bit of a game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. And then there are the PC credit cards, which are linked to your Optimum account.
Exactly.
And that can really work in your favor as well.
Yeah, that's a big, you know, a really good grocery card if you are, you know, a Loblaw shopper. You know, if you are a Shoppers Drug Mart / you know, the different Loblaw stores, absolutely. The PC Optimum has always been a favorite of many Canadians, just for that simplicity of earning those points and being able to just redeem it at the till for groceries. So, you know, and we see the same thing with Scene Plus, and now Metro out east has their Moi Rewards, and they have their Moi Reward credit cards. So there are so many options out there, and that's, you know, our rankings. We just try and, you know, trying to help narrow it down for people. I mean, this isn't an end all and be all of like the absolute best cards. Like, the best card for you, Jane, may not be the best card for me, and vice versa. So that's kind of why we kind of help narrow it down for people, and then they can kind of, you know, hopefully make a good educated decision on what's the best card or cards for them.
And the value you get from a credit card is really only good if you're paying off the balance entirely every month, right?
Exactly. If you're running a balance, you know, do not go with a rewards card. Go with a low interest card. There's a lot of low interest app options out there. You know, I tell people, if you run a balance 1 or 2 months, you know, I know Christmas just happened, so some people may run a balance for a couple months. That you know, that's okay in my books, because we're all, you know, everybody's trying to do their best. But if you're going to be running a balance for a longer period of time, definitely look at the low interest options and don't go with the rewards card, because the interest rates are just, you're not going to make anything back in terms of your rewards, in terms of what you're paying for interest.
Okay, so how can we contrast and compare? It was a good little overview that you and I just did, but where can people go to look at this information?
Yeah, so just go to rewardscanada.ca. We have links right on the homepage to both the cashback and travel options. I would recommend, you know, subscribing even to our newsletter, because we're putting out a bunch of tips and tricks. We do put out, like, even, you know, what are the best cards to use at Loblaw stores, the best cards to use at Metro and type things like that. So, and just, you know, and you can use these little extra tips and, you know, little educational items to, you know, make the most of your loyalty programs, because, you know, they're there. So we might as well be using them and trying to make the most of them.
Patrick, thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks, Jane.
Patrick Soyka is the founder of Rewards Canada. Jane for Libby. Libby's back on Thursday. Tasha Carradine is here tomorrow. And I will talk to you along with Andy Wilson tomorrow morning at 6 on the Morning Zoom with Andy and Jane. Right now, Eva D and the Number Ones at 1.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to 1. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.